We know Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Bengali songs. Yesterday we sang Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Sanskrit song. What about Bhaktivinoda Thakur's English song? There is a beautiful poetry by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and it has 21 stanzas. And through these 21 stanzas, he gave the entire Krishna conscious philosophy. The entire process has been presented. And I can tell you, whoever I have shown it to, like very important people, very scholarly persons, very successful individuals, and whoever I showed it to, just, you know, became completely enamored by that poetry. Even ordinary, like non-devotees, have been so appreciative. There is one very wealthy person in South Africa. He is quite close to me, and usually I stay with him, stay at his place when I go there in Cape Town. And he became so interested with this poetry that he sent this poetry in a beautifully printed form to all his friends. And he felt that. And this poetry goes like, I'm sure many of you have read it or heard of it. Alas for those who spend their days in festive mirth and joy. The dazzling deadly liquid forms their hearts forever employ. So this is the first stanza. What is the first stanza meaning? Alas. Alas means I pity them. I feel bad about those people. Alas for them. Alas for those who spend their days. How do they spend their days? In festive mirth and joy. Trying to enjoy this material nature. And dazzling, deadly, liquid forms their hearts forever employ. What is the nature of the material nature? It is dazzling, but deadly. Dazzling, deadly, liquid forms. Liquid form means a form that doesn't really have any duration. Say a fountain. Does it have any form? Just momentary. So the allurements of the material nature, attraction of the material nature is like that momentary allurements. That they don't last. The dazzling, deadly, liquid forms, their hearts forever employ. Their hearts are attracted, constantly attracted to that form which is dazzling, deadly and liquid. So isn't that the material existence? So in simple words, running after a mirage. Is there any substance in mirage? Mirage gives the promise that never is fulfilled. A thirsty person sees the mirage and thinks, oh, there is water. But can he quench his thirst running after mirage? No. Then the next stanza goes like, the shining bottles charm their eyes and draw their heart's embrace. The slaves of wine can never rise from what we call disgrace. Meaning? The shining bottles charm their eyes. Have you seen a drunkard? He sees a bottle of whiskey. The shining bottle, the charm their eyes and draw their heart's embrace. The slaves of wine, the drunkard are the slaves of wine, can never rise from what we call disgrace. What is the life of a drunkard? disgraceful life, isn't it? Rolls in the gutter. But he thinks he's Napoleon Bonaparte. So that is the condition of, like, everybody is, do you remember, Prabhupada used to often use the word inebriated or inebriety. What is the meaning of the word inebriety? Inebriety means drunk. So in the material nature, people are drunk. Drunk with the, being intoxicated with the allurements of the material nature. Drunk by drinking the poison of material allurements. So these are the first two stanzas. And do you want to hear the last two stanzas? By the way, the name of the poetry is the Sharagrahi Vaishnava. Sharagrahi means, Shara means essence. And Grahi means one who takes, one who accepts. So Vaishnava, do you remember? A Vaishnava is often addressed as a swan-like personality. What is the special quality of a swan? Yes. Separate the milk from water, take the milk, leaves the water. So what does a Vaishnava do? He takes the spiritual from the combination of matter and spirit and leaves the matter. Isn't that the spiritual life mean? Accepting and extracting the spiritual and reject material. So that's why he is called a Sharagrahi, or a swan-like personality. Sharagrahi Vaishnava. So the last two stanzas goes like, O Sharagrahi Vaishnava soul, thou art an angel fair, lead me on to Vrindavan and spirit's power declare. Did you? It's easy to understand, no? O Sharagrahi Vaishnava soul, thou art an angel fair. The angel is one who guides one to the Lord. Thou art an angel fair. Lead me on to Vrindavan and spirit's power declare. There rests my soul from matters free upon my lover's arms. Eternal's peace and spirit's soul, spirit's love, eternal peace and spirit's love are all my chanting charms. So it's such a beautiful poetry. I mean, it's such profound, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur is giving such beautiful analogy. One thing probably you have heard, forget the past that slips and never future dream at all. Live with the time that are with thee, and progress thee shall call. How many of you heard this expression? Yes. Forget the past that sleeps and never future dream at all. Live with the time that are with thee, and progress thee shall call. So, anyway, so we'll select a few stanzas. We won't be able to sing all 25, 21 stanzas. I'll select a few and we all will sing this song. That shows actually Bhaktivinoda Thakur's brilliance. Like, it's such a, even from English point of view, it's one of the most brilliant poetry. Even when it comes to poetry. Like, not many English poets actually wrote poetry following meter and rhyme. It's more like free-flowing English poetry. Very few poets actually wrote poetry with rhyme. Like, one of the famous rhyming poet was Coleridge. S.T. Coleridge, Samuel Taylor Coleridge. The day was bare, the harbor clear, merrily did we drop, below the hill, below the kark, below the lighthouse top. So this rhyme that is Coleridge is following, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is following the similar rhyme. Alas for those who spend their days in festive mirth and joy, the dazzling deadly liquid forms their hearts forever employ. Anyway, so this evening we'll have an English kirtan session. Krishna Padaya, Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale, Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine, Namaste Sharashate Deve Gauravani Pracharine, Nirvishesh Shunnavadi Paschatta Deshatarine Srila Prabhupada Ki
Jai.
Hare Krishna. So yesterday we discussed about Jarasandha attacking Mathura. How many times Jarasandha attacked Mathura? How many times? Yesterday we discussed how many times? 17 times. And how many soldiers he had with him during his each invasion?
1.2 million.
Well, I mean, that was roughly, the actual calculation was 23 Akshohini. 23 Akshohini soldiers. And so this is how Jarasandha actually attacked Mathura. But each time he attacked, he got defeated. And he went back. Why Krishna let Jarasandha go? Why did Krishna let Jarasandha? Yes, Saraswati? Okay. Do you know the recruiting agent? The recruiting agent, actually, he recruits people to be employed. Companies have these recruiting agents. I think in Europe there is... that is the picture of Leonardo da Vinci's...
Manpower.
Yeah. So that's a recruiting agent. Manpower. So Jarasandha was the recruiting agent, recruiting the demons and bringing them to Krishna so that Krishna doesn't have to go and slaughter those demons. They were brought to Krishna and Krishna killed them. So 17 times he did that, and 17 times he got, all these demons got slaughtered. Then finally Jarasandha attacked. Again Jarasandha came, 18th time. But this time Krishna did not kill the enemy, the demons. Why? Because many of the demons were not to be killed by that time. So they were to be killed at, in some, there was some more role they had to play in that drama of Krishna, in the pastimes of Krishna. Like Shishupal, Dantavakra, Salya, and Viduratha. So actually Krishna's pastimes is like a drama, is like a play. And they all are playing different roles. Some actors are playing the role of the devotees, and some are playing the role of a demon. But therefore at the end of the play, everyone is getting rewarded. Good acting, very good. Krishna gives him a slap in the back. And the reward is they are elevated to the spiritual world. So this is how Krishna was enacting his pastimes. So this time Krishna did not kill those enemies, but Krishna decided to run away from the battlefield. Ranchorji. And there was another reason. Quite a few things happened actually at that time. Another reason was There was another enemy, Kalajavana. Kalajavana, he was very powerful. And he asked Narad Muni, "See, no one is my match. So I'm getting bored. There is no fight. So tell me who I can fight with." So Narad Muni said that the only person that's suitable for your match, who is suitable match for you, is that Krishna. "Oh Krishna, where is he?" "He is in Mathura." So Kalajavana, with his 32 million soldiers, attacked Mathura. So apparently Krishna is showing some concern. "Oh, Kalajavana is coming from one side, Jarasandha is coming from another side. So how to protect the residents of Mathura? How to protect Mathura? Because if the enemy is coming from two sides, it will be difficult. If they came from one side, then he could have dealt with them." So Krishna consulted with Balaram, and then finally they decided that the residents of Mathura will be in great difficulty. So let's make some arrangement for them. So Krishna called Vishwakarma and said, "Vishwakarma, build a city in the middle of the ocean." "Why in the middle of the ocean?" "This Jarasandha is attacking so many times. So if it's in the middle of the ocean, then he won't be able to attack." So, and Vishwakarma said, "Yes, my lord, as you please." And he built a city in the middle of the ocean. And what is that? Dwarka, the city of Dwarka. And at night, by Krishna's arrangement, all the residents of Mathura in their sleep were transported to Dwarka. And in the morning, they woke up and they found, "Wow, where are we? It's a new place." And they found that they had their respective palaces. So they just accepted well. And now in the city, there's only Krishna and Balaram. So first one that came to attack was Kalajavana. So Kalajavana came, and Kalajavana was waiting. Narad Muni told him the description of Krishna. He looks like a 16-year-old boy. His complexion is bluish. Generally he wears yellow garment. And he's so handsome that unless you're a demon, as soon as you see him, you'll fall in love with him. So Kalajavana, then Krishna walked out of the city gate. And Kalajavana's army was stationed there outside the city. And Krishna didn't have any weapon in his hands. And when Krishna came out of the city gate, Kalajavana saw that this person actually fits the description of Narad Muni. And he also felt that I must be a demon because I'm not being attracted by him. So Kalajavana thought that Krishna was coming towards him. But Kalajavana is standing there. So Krishna came, and he came up to him and then started to walk away. So Kalajavana was ready to fight with Krishna. He saw Krishna was without arms and weapons. So he dropped his weapons And he thought that he will deal with him bare hand. But Krishna then just came in front of him and started to walk. So Kalajavana thought that maybe by seeing him he became afraid. So he is running away. So Kalajavana thought that he will catch him and finish him off. It seemed that Krishna was just walking and Kalajavana was running at full speed. Still he couldn't catch Krishna. It looked like he's just one hand away. He can just catch him like that. But Krishna kept moving and Kalajavana running with full speed. Still he couldn't catch Krishna. And then after running for so long, chasing Krishna, all of a sudden he saw that Krishna entered into a cave in a mountain. So he thought, Kalajavana thought, oh, now he is trying to hide. Okay, I will catch him. So Kalajavana went inside the cave. And inside the cave, he saw one person lying down. So it was semi-darkness. He could see something but couldn't really make out who that person was. And so he just kicked that person, thinking that that was Krishna. And that person who was sleeping, he just woke up. And something happened. As this person looked at Kalajavana, Kalajavana's body burnt to ashes. Who was that person? Very good. Muchukunda. What happened actually? Okay, Muchukunda was a great warrior, great king and warrior. He was such a great warrior that the demigods asked him to fight on their behalf against the demons. So demons were attacking and Muchukunda was fighting on behalf of the demigods. And this way, Muchukunda fought for many, many years for the demigods. And then finally, Kartikeya was born of Mahadev and Parvati, and he became the general of the demigods' army. Deva Senapati. So when Kartikeya came, the demigods told Muchukunda that now you can retire. Now you can go. And thank you so much for fighting on our behalf for so many years against the demons. So tell, we want to give you some benediction, some boon. So Muchukunda said, look, I don't really need anything. The only thing I need is to sleep. I'm so tired fighting for so many years without any interruption, without any break. So all I want is just to go and sleep. And if anyone breaks my untimely sleep, and as I look at him, he'll be burned to ashes. So Krishna, that's why Krishna tricked Kalajavana to come to the cave where Muchukunda was sleeping, and this is how he got burned. Krishna himself didn't have to kill Kalajavana. There's another reason behind that. Kalajavana was actually the son of Gargamuni. Gargamuni was married to one of the Jadu princesses. Although he was the cool guru, the guru of the Jadu dynasty, but one daughter of the Jadu family was given to him in marriage. And once the Jadus, Gargamuni felt that he was insulted by the Jadus. So he wanted to take revenge. And He wanted to, but he's a Brahmana, so he couldn't do anything. And they're disciples, so he couldn't curse them also. So he actually produced the son from the womb of a Yavani. Yavani means meat eater. So that's why he's Kala Yavana. And Krishna actually gave the benediction to Gargamuni that none of his family members will be killed by him. So that's why Krishna personally didn't want to kill him when he came to attack him. So then Krishna went back to Mathura and wiped out the entire 32 million soldiers of Kalajavana. Now in the meantime, Jarasandha came. So this time when Jarasandha came, Krishna did not confront him in a fight, but Krishna and Balaram started to run. So Jarasandha felt that now they have become so afraid of him that they are running away. So running. Krishna and Balaram came to a mountain called Pravarshan Mountain. And they got into the mountain. Jarasandha's army searched for Krishna Balaram in the mountain, couldn't find them. So Jarasandha decided to set the mountain in fire. And that's how to kill Krishna and Balaram. So he set the whole mountain in fire. And Krishna and Balaram, what did they do? They went on top of the mountain and from there they jumped and landed in Dwarka. So this is how Krishna became Ranchor, the one who ran away from the battlefield. For a Kshatriya, it's the worst disgrace. If a Kshatriya runs away from the battlefield, it's the worst disgrace. But for Krishna, everything is alright. Because he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He does all kinds of amazing things. He doesn't care about disgrace or glory. He just acts to enhance his pastimes. So this is how Dwarka became the capital of the Jadus. Garga Samhita gives the descriptions of the glories of Dwarka, glory of Mathura in details. So since we don't have enough time, we are not going to go into those details, at least now. So in this way, Krishna shifted the capital in Dwarka, and Jarasandha felt that now he has become, now he won. So Jarasandha's attitude was that I'll keep trying and keep trying and keep trying until I win. I remember when I was young, I read a story from a Western king. Maybe you can remember that, I forgot the name. Like he was defeated by his enemy and he tried to win his kingdom over many times, but he could not. Time and time again he was defeated. Then once he was hiding, he was resting in one cave, like away from everything, lost the soldiers, lost his army, lost everything. He was alone in a mountain cave. And then he saw in the cave one spider is trying to jump up to the ceiling. He was trying and falling. And finally he made it. So from that he learned a lesson. Don't give up. And he raised his army again and he attacked and he won. I think he was a Greek king, I forgot his name anyway. So in the material world also we find so many wonderful examples. In the material platform also there are so many great personalities that we can learn from. When I was young, I was very fond of Napoleon Bonaparte because his character was amazing. He was just an ordinary corporal in the army, French army. And from there he rose to the position of a general and took over. When some personalities have such great achievements, we have to recognize that they are great. There is greatness in them. That's what makes them. Do you want to hear about one such anecdote of Napoleon's greatness? I am seeing the French devotees are delighted. So, you see, the battle was going on, and in the battlefield, Napoleon fell asleep after 3 days. For 3 days, he didn't have any sleep. And he fell asleep. And the enemy just was moving forward to attack. So when the enemies move forward like that, the first response they get is the cannons. Because cannon goes to a great distance. But the soldiers, Napoleon's soldiers, did not open the cannon fire until they came to the completely critical line. Because they felt that if they opened the cannon fire, Napoleon would wake up. So in order to give Napoleon a few more minutes of sleep, they were just behaving like that. Why? This because they loved him so much. And why did they love him? There must have been something from him that made him love them so much. He was a great, very great personality actually. So anyway, so this is how Krishna actually dealt with Jarasandha. And Jarasandha finally thought that he won. Krishna ran away. He also wouldn't give up 17 times. He was defeated, but now he thought that finally I won. And so this is how Jarasandha got Krishna fulfilled his desire. Okay, you want to win. You want to feel that you won. Go ahead. But for how long will your victory last? Isn't it in the material nature? For how long can we enjoy our victory or achievements or glories? Ultimately, time takes its own course. And who is time? Who is time? Kala? Madhavendra, you are murmuring something? Yes, but Kala or time is an expansion of Balaram. So, in this material nature, actually Krishna's glance is manifesting in the form of time. Everything is happening on time, in the context of time. So, okay, now there was a king called Raivata from a place called Kushasthali. And King Raivata had 100 sons and 1 daughter. And this daughter was most beautiful, and she was most endowed with most wonderful qualities. So King Raivata started to wonder, who is my daughter's appropriate husband? So he decided to go to Brahmaloka. He decided to go to Lord Brahma and ask him, who is the suitable match for his daughter? So this way we can see that the parents' big responsibility is to get the daughters married. Like they get real headache. Even those days, King Raivata felt that headache to find a suitable husband. And he went all the way to Brahma to find out who is the suitable match for my daughter. So at that time, Brahma was listening to some music by one apsara called Purvachitti. And so some time went by. So when the performance ended, he approached King Raivata, approached Brahma and said, "My Lord, I just came here to find out a suitable husband for my daughter." So Brahma said, like, one second of Brahmaloka here is like a yuga in the material nature. Can you imagine what actually, how much time has passed there? He said, none of your family members are alive. Like everyone is gone, none of your friends are alive. So many yugas have went by in your finding out who is going to be the husband of your daughter. Anyway, now on the earth planet, it is the 28th Chaturyuga of Vaivarshata Manvantara, and it is the Dwapar Yuga of Vaivarshata Manvantara. 28th Chaturyuga. So Krishna and Balaram, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, have appeared on the earth planet. And the eternal husband of your daughter is Balaram. So go and offer your daughter to him. So Raivata, actually, King Raivata came and he saw the whole universe has changed so much, like especially the earth planet. And so he came and he offered his daughter to Balaram. Now she was from another yuga. Her height was like a mountain. And Balaram was only about 5 feet 10 inches. That was 5'10", 5'11", was Krishna's height. So what did Balaram do? He took his plow, put it on Revati's shoulder, and she became small, of his size. So this is how Balaram got married to Revati. So that naturally, the first son is getting married. With great pomp it was arranged, the marriage. So this is how Balaram got married to Revati. And so now Krishna and Balaram are in Dwarka, and there was a very, very powerful and very noble king called Bhishmaka in the country of Bidarbha. And he had a daughter who was extremely beautiful and endowed with most wonderful qualities. So one day when Narad Muni was in King Bidarbha's palace, King Vidarbha asked, look, my daughter is getting old, of marriageable age. Not old. Those days the girls used to get married before even they were 14, 15 years old. Not even 15, before they are 14 years old. So, this is how time is changing. I remember one of my relatives, she was 30 years old and not married. She was a professor in a college. So she, and everyone was in a great anxiety, oh, she's 30 years old and still not married. No, she's about to be 30 and still not married. And nowadays you see like things are changing so much. Anyway, let's not get into that. So, getting married early is good. That's the Vedic culture. But the modern thing is promoting things, oh, child marriage. I heard that my grandmother got married when she was 6 years old. They got married, but they didn't move into the husband's house. They got married, but stayed in the father's house, and then at a suitable age, they came to the husband's house. So, anyway, so in the Vedic time, they were married quite young, generally at the age of about 14 or before. And so, Narad Muni then told him that the suitable person for her marriage is Krishna, the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. And they started to describe Krishna's qualities. And Rukmini, the daughter of King Bhishmaka, overheard it, Krishna's qualities, about Krishna from Narad Muni. And she fell in love with him. She felt that if at all I get married, then this is the person I'll get married to, no one else. I'm giving my heart to this person. So this is also another example that how by hearing about Krishna, one can fall in love with Krishna. One can become a devotee of Krishna, just by hearing. If we properly appreciate Krishna's qualities, then yes, we'll fall in love with him. So, in this way, Rukmini fell in love with Krishna. And Narad Muni also told Krishna about Rukmini. Narad Muni is a great matchmaker that way. So he went and told about Krishna about Rukmini. So hearing about Rukmini, Krishna fell in love with her. And when King Bhishmaka, the father of Rukmini, got to know that Krishna also has become attracted to his daughter and Krishna is so qualified, then he decided that her daughter should be given in marriage to Krishna. But his son, Rukmi, was opposed to Krishna. So he rather decided that Rukmini should be married to Shishupal, the enemy of Krishna. And Shishupal, that way, you see, from material calculation, they were all very aristocratic, coming from a big lineage and so heroic in their deeds and so forth. And in their eyes was Krishna, they used to suspect whether Krishna is a kshatriya at all. And even if he was a kshatriya, he grew up in the association of the Vaishyas. So according to them, these are not, these are disqualifications. Oh, look at him. Yeah. He didn't have proper upbringing. He didn't go to a big school. He doesn't have such a big degree. So he is useless. That is materialistic calculation. Materialistically, people judge things according to their this kind of calculation. Oh, which college you went to? Which university you went to? What degree did you get? Okay, you are a suitable candidate for my daughter. No consideration whether he's a meat eater or a drunkard and womanizer. They don't care about that. Their thing is, he is so aristocratic. It will increase my reputation if my daughter gets married to him. So we see that trait was there even those days. Like, their consideration was, who is Krishna? He's not a war kshatriya. Even they asperge doubt in Krishna's birth. Like when it'll come to later on, we'll discuss about that. When Shishupal was insulting Krishna, one of the things he said, his father is fair complexion, his mother is fair complexion, how come he's black? You can well imagine what it is actually indicating. So from material calculation, we cannot really judge Krishna. It will be complete fallacy to kind of judge Krishna from this kind of materialistic calculation. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's it. Look at his activities. Krishna also made it clear to us also, Janma karma chame dibbam. My janma and karma is dibbi. But out of janma and karma, which one is more prominent, more important? Janma or karma? Right. One should be judged by his activities, by his ability and efficiency, and not by birth. As a matter of fact, in this age, the demons are born in these aristocratic Brahmana families. Meaning, since the Brahmanas are considered to be the highest according to the Vedic culture, but there is a total Varna Shankar admixture. It's difficult to figure out. From the birth, we cannot really make out who is who. We can find Sudras having Brahminical qualities. What to speak of Sudras? Those are even outside of Vedic culture. They are being elevated to the most exalted Vedic situations, like Vaishnavas. Srila Prabhupada came to the West. Those had no connection with the Vedic culture. And Prabhupada is making them Vaishnavas. Prabhupada is making them Brahmanas. Anyway, so Rukmi considered that no, not to Krishna. He doesn't have any aristocratic birth. His upbringing is not at all impressive. And also look, his activities. He had been a thief from his childhood. He was stealing yogurt, butter, and he was even stealing the dresses of women. Basan chod. So this is how they actually calculated Krishna. And look, he's a kshatriya, ran away from the battlefield, and you want your daughter to get married to him? No way. That was Rukmi's stand. And actually most of the fathers those days were very worried, because they saw that their sons were friends of Jarasandha, Kamsa. And what did Kamsa do? Kamsa put his father in prison. So the fathers are worried that maybe my son also, if I go against him, he will put me in prison. and treat me like the way Kamsa treated his father. So yeah, they were actually worried, and they didn't go against the son, the demoniac sons. And they actually can't trust the demons. They don't have any sympathy, father, mother, sister, brother. Like if anybody comes on his way, get rid of him or her. Like we saw, Kamsa in one hand he is so affectionately treating his sister on her wedding, when she is going to the in-laws house, he is driving the chariot itself himself. Now you see, this is, I mean, it may appear that, well, I mean, what's not, you know, this is okay, Kamsa is driving the chariot. But the thing is, driving the chariot is not the business of a prince. Driving the chariot is the business of a chariot driver. And chariot driver is like a servant. So he assumed the role of their servant, Vasudeva and Devaki's servant, driving the chariot. But as soon as he heard that the eighth son of his sister is going to kill him, he immediately wanted to kill her. So this is the demoniac nature, no consistency. They simply act on their personal motive. So that's why King Bhishmaka was afraid that if he went against Rukmi, then Rukmi may also put him in prison. So he silently accepted this proposal. And what did Rukmi want? Rukmi wanted Shishupal to be married to Rukmini. And Rukmini already made up her mind. Krishna or no one else. And all the arrangement is being made. Shishupal came with all his friends and along with the army, because they were afraid that Krishna may do some mischief. So they came all well prepared. All the friends of Shishupal were there with their soldiers, army. And Rukmini wrote a letter. Just 2 days left, 2 days before the wedding, to Krishna, and sent it to the Brahmana. That please go and give this letter to Krishna. And in that letter, Rukmini wrote that she has given her heart to Krishna and she cannot offer it to anyone else. So she appealed to Krishna, please come and claim me as yours. And if you don't, then I'll give up my life. So Krishna got the letter. It's only one night left by the time he received the letter. So through the night, he actually drove. He called his chariot driver, Daruka, and asked him to yoke the horses and the chariot. And Krishna took the Brahmana with him, and he drove for Kundingram, the capital of Vidarbha. Now Balaram got the news that Krishna left alone. So Balaram suspected that some trouble may be there. So Balaram got the army and followed Krishna. So the next morning, King Bhishmaka saw Krishna and greeted him with nice prayers. And Rukmini in the meantime waiting, and she is thinking that, did the Brahmana reach in time? Did Krishna accept my prayer? So she was in acute anxiety, and then the Brahmana came and told Krishna has come. So now she is relieved. And she offered her obeisances to the Brahmana. And she blessed him that I will always reside in your house. Meaning, who is Rukmini? Lakshmi Devi. Blessed that she would always be, there will be wealth and opulence in his house all the time. And the arrangement was made, actually Rukmini herself suggested that in the morning they will, she will go to before the wedding ceremony, she will go to Durga Devi's temple to offer prayers to her, take her blessings. So she went, and the idea was that from there Krishna will, when she came out after worshipping Durga, Krishna will kidnap her. So in the meantime, Balaram also joined Krishna. And it's a very beautiful description. After worshipping, she actually offered some beautiful prayers to Durga Devi. Just praying that she can get Krishna as her husband. And so after worshipping Durga Devi, as she came out, it said that her beauty enchanted everyone so much, they practically became completely stupefied. All the soldiers. Like here also they had 23 Akshohini soldiers. Jarasandha had 10 Akshohini, Bidurata had 5, Pondraka had 3. In this way they had 23 Akshohini soldiers. But they got completely enamored by seeing the beauty of Rukmini. As if they kind of, some of them fainted, many of them froze, and God knows what happened to others. So, and it is said that Krishna, just like lightning, just penetrated through that army and came right in front of Rukmini, picked her up in the chariot and drove back to their army with Balaram. And when they came back to senses, there was a huge hue and cry. Look, that butter thief is now stealing women. She's stealing the princess. Catch him, kill him. And this is how they all made a huge turmoil. And then attacked Krishna. Balaram's brother, one of them came, Shalva, with a mace, and he hit Gada. Gada also picked up a mace and beat Shalva up so badly that Shalva is lying in the ground. So seeing Shalva in that condition, all the others came. Jarasandha, Pondraka, Biduratha, and so they surrounded Gada. So at that time Balaram just appeared there. And with single-handedly Balaram actually half killed all those kings. And they were all unconscious, lying on the ground. Then Balaram, using his plow, got all the armies, pulled them, and with his mace he smashed them. So this is how all the 23 Akshohini were smashed. Shishupal was called ready to go to the arena to get married, and he got the news. He got the news that the bride has been stolen. So completely disappointed. He was really morose. Then Jarasandha came and consoled him. Shishupal, okay, one girl you lost, so what? There are so many other princesses. So don't feel bad, and don't worry, we will take revenge. And ultimately, you see, like these people had perfect knowledge, and they would give the advice. Ultimately, everything is a matter of time. Prakrute kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvacha. So he gave the advice. Sometimes due to time, due to the influence of time, you lose, sometimes you gain. This is life. See, 17 times I lost, but then finally I won. So this is how Jarasandha called, consoled Shishupal. And so then Krishna and Balaram with their army, with Rukmini, they started to move towards Dwarka. Rukmini's brother got the news that his sister has been stolen from the wedding arena. So he immediately got himself ready. And he took his soldier and he took a vow that unless I kill Krishna and rescue my sister, I'm not going to come back to this city. So he caught up with Krishna and got into a fight with Krishna. The terrible fight took place. Then Krishna finally grabbed him and climbing onto his chest, he was about to kill him with his sword. So Rukmini fell at Krishna's feet. Please spare the life of my brother. So Krishna said, and Krishna actually tied him up with the pole, on the pole of his chariot. The chariot is a pole that is keeps the flag hoisted. He tied him up on that pole and he shaved him up, half the head and half the beard. So at that time Balaram came there. Balaram said, Krishna, this is not the way to treat your brother-in-law. There is a limit to humiliation. How are you going to win the heart of your bride if you treat her brother like that? And in this way, Balaram mildly, jokingly chastised Krishna and let Rukmi lose. So Rukmi did not go back to his kingdom, Kundingram. He actually settled in a place called Bhojakat, and there he settled his kingdom. So Rukmini then was brought to Dwarka, and with great pomp and grandeur the wedding took place. It is so amazing, opulent arrangement, that is completely beyond our conception. Can't even imagine how it is. And so so this is Krishna's first marriage with Rukmini. So do you want to hear how Krishna got married to others? You like to hear that? Okay. There was a king called Satrajit. He was the worshipper of sun god Suryadev. And being pleased with his worship, Suryadev gave him a jewel called Samantaka jewel. Samantaka jewel was as brilliant as the sun. And every day it used to produce about 25 tons. Let me see. No. About maybe 250 kilos of gold. every day. So, so one day, Satrajit came to Dwarka in the assembly of King Ugrasen. And when he came to Dwarka, people started to, the news reached to the assembly that Suryadev has come. Sun God has come. Seeing such brilliance. But then later on they found that it was not Suryadev. It was due to Samantaka Mani that Satrajit was seeing, look, appearing to be so brilliant. And everybody thought that he was Suryadev himself. So, hearing about the wonderful characteristic of Samantaka jewel, Krishna suggested to Satrajit that please offer this to Ugrasen. Because it's a custom that the best of the possession should be given to the king. So, but Satrajit didn't say anything, silent. And that means he did not accept this proposal. So he went back. So one day, Satrajita's brother, Prashen, he went hunting in the forest, wearing that Samantaka jewel. And when he was in the forest, a lion attacked him and killed him. And then Jambavan, who is Jambavan? Lord Ramchandra's associate. Jambavan killed the lion and took the jewel. And he went home. So Prashen didn't come back. Prashen went wearing that jewel. So Satrajit started to spread the rumor that Krishna killed Prashenjit. Krishna killed Prashen to take the jewel and took the jewel. So it was a big disgrace to Krishna's reputation. So Krishna decided that he must free himself from this bad rumor. So he went to the forest and he found Prashen's dead body there. Next to that there's a lion and there's a footsteps. So following the footsteps he came to a cave. And he went inside the cave. And inside the cave he found there was a beautiful city. So, and there he saw that one little child playing with that Samantaka jewel. So he asked the child to give it to him. But seeing Krishna, the child started to cry. And Jambavan came and saw this stranger. So he attacked him. So they fought for 28 days. No one could defeat the other one. There is one description which is not here. It is said that Jambavan at that time, he used to worship Lord Ramchandra. And so there was nothing to, no flower. So he collected some moss that was there in the cave. And so he, with the moss, he offered to Lord Ramchandra. And then when he came to fight, then he found that the moss was on Krishna's feet. So then he realized that this is my Lord. So he started to offer his very, very wonderful prayers, expressing his mistake and apologized for that and glorified the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then he went and gave Samantaka jewel to Krishna, and along with that he gave his daughter Jambavati. And so Jambavati was brought to Dwarka. So Jambavati is actually the second wife of Krishna. And now Krishna came and gave the jewel back to Satrajit. So take it. And Satrajit was extremely embarrassed, and he was also very afraid that he offended Krishna. No one knows what may happen to him. So, in order to make truce, he decided to give the jewel back to Krishna. And along with that, he offered his extremely beautiful daughter, Satyabhama. So this is how Satyabhama became Krishna's third wife. Then Krishna went to Hastinapur to meet the Pandavas. And it was a very beautiful reunion. Pandavas were so fond of Krishna, so dependent upon Krishna. And now they met. And immediately Arjun and Krishna developed a deep friendship because they were of the same age. So one day, Arjun and Krishna went out hunting in the forest. So after hunting, they came to Jamuna. And sitting there, they were taking rest. They were talking to each other about many wonderful anecdotes that they have experienced. And then Arjun saw there's a extremely beautiful woman there. And in the middle of nowhere, there's this woman. So he approached her, "Who are you?" She said that, "I am the daughter of Sun God. My name is Kalindi. I live inside my father created a palace inside the river. I stay there praying to the Lord to accept me as his wife." So Arjun said, "That Lord of yours is here." So he took Kalindi to Krishna, and immediately she recognized the Lord of her heart, offered obeisances and offered herself to him, and Krishna accepted him. Then they all went to Dwarka, and another wedding ceremony took place with inconceivable grandeur and pomp. So there was a king in the land of Avanti. This king had a daughter. Her name was Mitravinda. And she had two brothers, Vinda and Anuvinda. So this Vinda and Anuvinda were Duryodhan's follower, Duryodhan's friend and follower. So, and naturally, they became inimical to Krishna. So they considered Krishna to be their enemy. So Mitravinda wedding was in a Sayambara. Sayambara means a Kshatriya princess can select her own husband. All the kings and young kings and princes would come, and the princess had the opportunity to select her own husband. So Mitra and Vinda and Anuvinda told their sister, select anyone as your husband but Krishna. Don't ever. But Krishna came in that assembly. Just seeing him, Mitravinda's heart was stolen by him. So these are all actually expansions of Lakshmi Devi. So they're naturally attracted to Krishna, and they're Krishna's eternal consorts. So Mitravinda went and offered the garland to Krishna, accepting him as a husband. So all the kings assembled there, they became upset and attacked Krishna. And there also, who can fight with the Supreme Personality of Godhead? No matter how big or powerful their army may be. Only thing is, vinashaya cha duskritam, these are Krishna's opportunity to wipe out the demons. So this is how Krishna got married to Mitravinda. There was another extremely beautiful princess, the daughter of King Nagnajit. And the King Nagnajit could see that her daughter was not an ordinary girl. So he felt that, and the person who will become her husband has to be extraordinary. And in his position there were 7 bulls. They were fierce like a lion, and they had the strength, each bull had the strength of thousands of elephants. So his condition was that if anybody could tame these 6-7 bulls, then only he can claim her. And many kings came to tame the bulls, but instead of taming the bulls, they lost their limbs. Many of them even lost their lives. So that's the Kshatriyas, you see. Like, even to gain something, they would mind giving up their lives. So Krishna came. King Nagnajit very respectfully accepted Krishna. And Krishna said, I heard about your daughter. I would like to marry her. So King Nagnajit said, that's very fine. Like, I'll be more than delighted to have a personality like you as my son-in-law. And I know my daughter will be extremely fortunate, but you see, I have a condition. The 7 bulls. Anyone who can 7 bulls only can claim the hands of my daughter. Krishna said, fine. So he went into the arena. As soon as he entered into the arena, all 7 bulls were released and they charged towards Krishna. And Krishna immediately expanded himself into 7 Krishnas and dealt with those bulls. And he subdued them, put a ring around the nose, and like tame little children, he led them to King Nagnajit. Come, here is the 7 bulls. Where is your daughter? So this is how Krishna got married to Saibya or Nagnajiti. Satya or Nagnajiti. And then another princess was Bhadra of Koshal, and she was also an expansion of Lakshmi Devi. So you can well imagine how beautiful she must have been and how qualified she must have been. But when Krishna came, her father received Krishna and offered her daughter, offered his daughter to her. Did you count how many? One left still, right? That's Lakshmana. Lakshmana was the daughter of the king of Madras, Madhura Raj. And there also, from her Sayambara, Krishna kidnapped her or took her away, just as he did Rukmini. So this is how Krishna got married to 8 principal queens. Rukmini, Jambavati, Satyabhama, Kalindi, Nagnajiti, Satya, Mitravinda, Bhadra and Lakshmana. Now, when Krishna was in Dwarka, Indra came to Krishna and reported that, look, this demon has stolen my umbrella and the earrings of our mother, Aditi. And he is causing so much disturbance. So please do something about him. We are not able to deal with him. Who is that? The son of Mother Earth, Bhomasura or Narakasura. So Krishna went, but Krishna actually took Satyabhama with him in the chariot, came to Narakasura's capital, Pragjyotishpur, which is today's Assam, and he blew his conch shell, Panchajanya. And the sound of the conch shell woke up Bhomasura's chief guard, Mura. And he had 5 heads. And he attacked Krishna. So anyway, so Krishna, after a long fight, he used his Sudarshan Chakra and cut off the heads of 5 heads of Mura. Then eventually Bhomasura came out and a terrible fight ensued. And it was so terrible that Satyabhama at some point felt that Krishna is in danger. So Satyabhama said, kill him, kill him. And then Krishna sent his Sudarshan and severed the head of Bhomasura. Now why did Krishna take Satyabhama with him? Because Brahmasura's mother was Bhudevi. And Bhudevi made a condition with Varahadev. She knew that this would become a demon. So, and she knew that he'd become so obnoxious, so intolerable, that the Lord has to kill himself. So, Satyabhama made a condition, Bhudevi made a condition that if at all you have to kill him, you have to do it with my permission. So this is how she thought that she would protect. But Bhudevi is an expansion of Satyabhama. So that's why Krishna took, and when Satyabhama said, kill him, kill him, Krishna then killed him. with her due permission. So this Bhaumasura had many, many princesses and imprisoned them in his captivity. There were 16,100 princesses were captured by Bhaumasura. So Krishna released them from the prison and Krishna then, all these girls approached Krishna that look, no one is going to accept us because our reputation has been tarnished. I have been stolen by this demon and had been in his prison. So you are the savior of the fallen souls. So you please save us. So then Krishna said, okay, since you are surrendering to me and since I, my assurance is there, sarva dharman paritajya, okay, I'll accept you. So this is how Krishna accepted 16,100 princesses. And he expanded himself into 16,100 Krishnas and got married to them. So this is how wonderfully Krishna got married to 16,100 queens. 16,108 in total. So, thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande. So, you can have a little kirtan. Oh, yeah, question. I'm sorry. Yeah, first I will deal with Tomar Namtaki? Ratan. Ratan Chakrabarti. So Ratan had the question yesterday which I just briefly answered, did not properly answer that. His question was that we in Tulasi prayer we say the prayer as Vishnu Bhakti Pradidevi. So why Vishnu Bhakti? We are worshippers of Krishna. So why not Krishna Bhakti? So my answer to that was that the prayer actually is written in that way. Prayer goes like Vrindaye Tulasidevaye Priyaye Keshavashracha Vishnu Bhakti Pradidevi Satya Bhakti. You will notice one thing that generally all the elderly devotees say Vishnu Bhakti. Only the newcomers say Krishna Bhakti. But actually, prayer should be said just the way it is presented. And what is the difference between Krishna and Bhakti, Vishnu? Ultimately, it's a matter of sambandha gyan. What matters? What the sambandha? Vishnu and Krishna, there is no difference. But if you are a Vishnu devotee, you'll see him as separate from Krishna. And it is also very customary that prayers should be said the way it has been presented. We should not change the presenters. Like for example, a very wonderful example is when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was blessed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya altered one prayer. That prayer actually said, let me see. Anyone remember that prayer of Sarvam Bhattacharya? Huh? Yeah, right. The first line? Good. Tatte anukampa shushumikshamana. Oh no, not that. Like he's reciting the Bhagavatam verse, but he changed it. Instead of mukti pad, the verse actually says mukti padesa daibhak. But Sarvam Bhattacharya said, Bhakti Padesa Dai Bhag. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no, don't change the scriptural presentation. When it says Mukti Pade, Mukti Padesa Dai Bhag. Okay? Okay, any other question? Yes?
This question is not for me, it's from a devotee from India. So Mr. Tarun Gandhi Krishnadas, he posted this question yesterday seminar on the Facebook post. Guru Maharaj, in starting off your lecture, Your Holiness mentioned that we should always associate with exalted devotees or guru. It seems many times that I can't get Bapu association, so I tried to associate with Vani in form of instructions, but couldn't do it nicely. Could you try regarding this?
Yeah, sure. Vani association is also important. Vani association is very important. But we should also look for Bapu association. Right? And you'll always find exalted devotees. Like when you find, when you come across, especially in ISKCON, there are so many exalted devotees. It is not that always, you know, these exalted devotees, when only the gurus are exalted devotees, the GBCs are exalted devotees. Those who have developed his love and attachment for Krishna is exalted. He may not, he or she may not have big position or big recognition, but from their devotion we should. And we can always associate among each other. Can't we consult and discuss about Krishna consciousness? So this is how we have to always associate. Okay. So therefore we should not think that association of exalted devotees, Bapu association, is not available. You'll always find that. But general consideration is find those associations within ISKCON. Don't go out of ISKCON searching for exalted devotees. Because you know our loyalty to ISKCON is our loyalty to Srila Prabhupada is very important. And if we go out, our loyalty may get affected. If we don't have that kind of association, create that association. Preach to them. Preach to people. Make them into devotees. Then sit together and have Krishna Katha. If not, at least read Srila Prabhupada's books and consult about realizations. What did you understand? Like that's what we used to do early days. We were just new devotees those days. Whenever we had free times, we would sit together and read from Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna book, and we'd pass the book. One would read one paragraph, pass it on to others. He read then his next paragraph, so this is where we go around. And then we would discuss. So this is how we can always create the association. Yes, sir.
Guru Maharaj, how can it be avoided that these details like Vishnu Bhakti or Krishna Bhakti that they actually change in the course of time?
Oh, Vishnu Bhakti, Krishna Bhakti is same. So if somebody is happy saying Krishna Bhakti, okay.
But maybe some other details
at least now that you heard, you can tell others. Alright? Like one interesting thing you'll notice, all proper disciples or senior devotees from those days, we don't say Krishna Bhakti, we say Vishnu Bhakti, because that's how we've been taught. And not just by saying Krishna Bhakti, you're getting Krishna Bhakti. Right? What do you say?
Not even when a person is a devotee, but also still, like I realize now, that certain things were just very, everybody was doing naturally everything that as the way to the Prabhupada introduced it. But nowadays we see so many things all of a sudden pop up that we think, oh, where did this come from? And then
That is a big challenge actually for an institution like ours. Therefore the leadership has to be very strict. And one thing we follow, at least I try to follow, don't introduce anything new. The standard we followed during Prabhupada's time, stick to that trend, that standard. Of course, other things, you know, like, it's not that always we have to be so rigid. Like, for that matter, like, you know, I'm not so particular about dress codes, that devotees have to wear dhoti and kurta. As a matter of fact, when I'm traveling, I make my secretaries wear Western clothes. It's more convenient, it's smarter, and so that's it, you know, like, we have to, like, the other day, we were having an Ishtagoshti, Mahasangha actually, in Bhaktivedanta manner. And Vaisheshika Prabhu was there, Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj and myself were there. One question came to Vaisheshika Prabhu, when you go out distributing books, should you wear Indian clothes or should he wear Western clothes? Should he wear devotee clothes or should he wear Western clothes? His answer was, whatever makes you more comfortable, you dress like that. It's up to you. Like, why dress up in some way that makes you so self-conscious that you won't be able to distribute books? So whatever is practical, just do it. Or go to a certain situation, probably you'll feel more comfortable wearing Western clothes. As I was saying, like, I tell my secretaries, dress up in Western clothes. Like that, you know. Like, these are not some adjustments. These are not changes. And Prabhupada also never said that you have to go out distributing books in devotee clothes.
Yeah. But as we come to the temple, let's say if we come to see you, then
whatever makes him comfortable. Like, say for example, when some devotees come to see me in the airport, especially in London, a huge number of devotees come to see me, and some of them come to see me while going to the office or coming back from the office. They're dressed in Western clothes, so what? As I said, like, you know, if someone is coming, you know, like, yes, I would say in the temple is better that they wear devotee clothes. When they're going in front of the deities, devotee clothes. For example, I can't imagine seeing you in shirts, in shorts and skirts. No, I'm just saying it. Like, you know, like, some of you are so ingrained in there, in your, you know, way of doing things. And but, you know, also we have to see, things have changed quite a lot now. Like, for example, those days none of you thought of going to office and work, right? But now when they're going out to work, you know, they have to make some adjustments accordingly. So that's why, you know, like, what I'm saying is, certain things we should not change at all. But certain adjustments we may have to do according to time, place and circumstances. And it will happen. It will happen naturally. Like, have you noticed one thing? that in China and Japan, Buddha looks Chinese and Japanese.
Sorry?
In Japan, yes. Buddha's form looks like Japanese.
Oh, okay.
Right? Doesn't look Indian. Similarly in China. Right? So, you know, by culture they accepted, adapted that, you know. You will notice also in some places Krishna, like for example Manipur, their Mongolian, you know, appearance. And you see Krishna looks somewhat like Mongolian there, you know. Because, you know, that is how they kind of, you know, the culture has actually developed into, you know, probably they feel more close to that form. So, what happened? Meaning? How we should dress in Harinam? Let some wear devotee clothes and some karmi clothes. Then karmi will think, oh, so many karmis are joining. So I also can join.
I would like to ask, what about eating outside? Like devotees are recommended to eat only Krishna Prasad, but for certain reasons we have to travel outside and cannot restaurants which are catering, which are giving Krishna Prasad everywhere.
Well, again, I will say Prabhupada was not very strict, so rigid as such. Like, many of the rigid customs in ISKCON has been started by young American devotees those days. And I think they imported that from Gaudiya Math. Some of them stayed in Gaudiya Math and they saw that rigid. Because Prabhupada saw that, you know, he's spreading Krishna consciousness in the West. You know, making a very rigid thing, you know, it'll just... And when, in a way we are seeing, you know, like... people are working, most of our congregations are working, many of them have to travel. And by Krishna's mercy, vegetarian food is quite available nowadays. So don't make it so rigid. Offer to Krishna. Like I heard those days, early days, devotees used to go to a supermarket to buy things. And from outside the supermarket, they used to offer the entire supermarket. And also generally I don't say that, you know, very much, because I don't want to give a wrong impression. But I will request you, please take it with the right understanding and spirit. Once Prabhupada told me, just from, you know, like just like that, not that I was talking to Srila Prabhupada, I was near Prabhupada, I was doing something to him. And not even serving him prasad at that time. Prabhupada just on his own, he just told me that in this age it is impossible to maintain the purity of food. Therefore Krishna gave the holy name. You know, like, just like that, you know, Prabhupada just told me. And do you want to hear another anecdote? This one, Prabhupada, I mean, I actually wrote in that book, Ocean of Mercy. I was just a new devotee, and to print, I was printing Prabhupada's early Bengali writings in a book. So I used to go to Calcutta. So one day when I came back, I was told Prabhupada was inquiring where you are. You see, in the evening, Prabhupada used to give darshan, and we used to just sit there, you know, like, And there were quite a few people, and I was quite thrilled to hear, oh, Prabhupada noticed that I was not there. So I immediately went to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada, were you looking for me? Prabhupada said, where were you? I said, Prabhupada, I went to Calcutta. Why did you go there? Prabhupada, I'm printing a book. Where is the book? Prabhupada is taking so long. Yes, in India, everything takes so long. Then, you know, it just occurred to me, I was just sitting there in front of Prabhupada, and Prabhupada, I just admitted, Prabhupada, it is said that one who cannot control his tongue cannot get Krishna. I cannot control my tongue. Prabhupada said, take Krishna Prasad. Then I admitted, Srila Prabhupada, when I go to Calcutta, sometimes I go to a sweet shop and eat sweets. Prabhupada said, that's also Krishna Prasad. It's with what consciousness you are taking. That this food is Krishna's mercy. So accept the food with that understanding. It's Krishna's mercy. So mercifully, so kindly Krishna has given it. And I tell you, it was such an eye-opener. You know. And I think from then onwards, I stopped going to the sweet shop.
Products now, devotees see that they have some conservative E-TV and this and that, and they are not bona fide, and you know, people want to look at so many things.
Some devotees are so particular. That
as long as possible, maintain the purity. As long as possible. And actually nowadays things are happening. Like, say for example, America, we know which companies are using vegetarian rennet when you buy cheese. That is the main thing actually. And so that way, you know, nowadays lots of products are actually becoming pure vegetarian. So you can see how Krishna is making such wonderful arrangements. Yadurani, you have a question? The difference. Yeah. The gopis of Vrindavan became the queens of Dwarka. For example, Radharani became Satyabhama. Chandravali became Rukmini. Lalita became Jambavati. Like that, you know. These gopis came as queens.
In the 28th Mahavasara, the yellow avatar is the golden avatar is Tatan Mahaprabhu, but in other Mahavasaras, who is the yellow avatar?
Yeah, this is his golden incarnation. There are four colors that Krishna comes. In Satya Yuga, he comes in white complete. His form is white. In Treta Yuga, red. Dwapar Yuga, dark. And in Kali Yuga, molten golden. So that is the general sequence.
But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu doesn't come in every Kali Yuga.
No.
So in other Kali Yuga, who is the yellow
incarnation? That's the Yuga Avatar. Yuga Avatar. You see, the scripture has been described by the color. The Sheta Rakta Tatha Pita Idaning Krishna Tangata. And his name probably is Chaitanya in Kali Yuga. But this Chaitanya is not Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is a combined form of Radha Krishna. I have to see like his name of Kali Yuga, Yugavatar, because then again, you know, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's prayers are saying, Na Chaitanyat Krishna Jagati Paratattam Paramiha. This Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is none other than Krishna himself, there is no other truth, tattva, beyond him. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is being established. The name, through the name, Chaitanya is being established as non-different from Krishna and the Supreme Absolute Personality of Godhead.
Thank you very much. You explained so many wonderful stories about Krishna killing different demons. Is there any reason why, historically, the Mahabharata, the fights between the Kauravas and Pandavas, are more popular, recognized within India than the leaders of Krishna in these particular pastimes?
I didn't get that. What's the point?
As Krishna is a supreme personality of Godhead, he comes so many demons as well. But in terms of historically in India, people recognize the Mahabharata as one of the more popular ancient stories of the Parasites itself. But why not the Krishna Leela?
Why not Krishna Leela?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, you know, Krishna's identity has been revealed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Mahabharata is the history, and it is so exciting history of India. And in that history, Krishna is not really playing a very important role. He is more or less in the background. That ultimately Mahabharata is culminating into the Pandavas. So the prominence is on Pandavas and Kauravas, right? But Krishna is more in the background, right? So his identity as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not so clearly established. And besides that, due to Shankaracharya's influence, India has become so impersonalistic. That, you know, they are not so much concerned about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They think that God is a man's imagination. Krishna is just an ordinary person with some extraordinary power, and people are thinking him to be God. That's because of no proper education and misdirection due to Shankaracharya's teachings. Therefore, there is a need for Shankaracharya's teaching to be smashed. But it hasn't been smashed properly enough. Although the Vaishnava Acharyas have done that and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has done that. But I think Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left the job up to ISKCON to do that. Okay, last question.
Sometimes when we talk to non-devotees, we hear this claim that in a democratic society that everyone should have the right to say whatever they want, to the point of blaspheming even God. And sometimes even people do blaspheme God. What should be our response to that, please?
You didn't see.
I'm sorry?
Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, don't fight. That's why, you see, he didn't come with any weapon this time. Other incarnations, Krishna always came with weapon to kill the demons. So whenever there is blasphemy, leave the place. Because, you know, like, trying to forcibly try to stop them and all will simply create more disturbance. Rather preach. Create, you know, such a powerful democratic voice through democracy that their voice won't be heard. Right? But democratically you'll smash them. Right? So, the thing is, you know, main point is, if there is any blasphemy, Just walk away from there. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande Hari Gaur.